So I'm from Burma, if you guys don't know that. So tonight you'll hear some bits of my kind of, you know, stories, things I've kind of experienced, that kind of stuff. And I'm quite grateful tonight, I'm really grateful actually, that I'm able to share tonight what I felt God has put on my heart for the past month or so, actually. Both Joyce and I have been wrestling through, you know, the content of what I'm about to share, and I'm quite grateful that this verse is the verse that I'm doing, because I feel like this is a verse I've kind of been, you know, sitting on for a little while. So I'm excited that you'll be joining with us in the wrestling after tonight. So Cain talked about taking responsibility of your faith the week before. You might say doing right by yourself. And then last week he talked about what it means to be a community that is outward looking, being right with your neighbors. So tonight, kind of like continuing from that, I'll be talking about what it means to be right with God. So to give you a quick overview of tonight's passage, firstly, Paul talked about, you know, he thanks, and he said, rejoice in the Lord. And then he said, there's an enemy of the gospel. It's pretty intense. And then he said, this is my testimony. And after that, he tells us why he's doing what he's doing. So that's kind of the overview of tonight. Great. Let's read verses 1 to 3. It says, further, my brothers and sisters, rejoice in the Lord. It is no trouble for me to write the same things to you again, and it is a safeguard for you. Watch out for those dogs, those evildoers, those mutilators of the flesh, for it is we who are circumcised, we who serve God by his Spirit, who boast in Christ Jesus, and who put no confidence in the flesh. So Paul begins this chapter, you know, just kind of saying, yeah, I'm writing this thing. And then he starts with this warning, right? He's like, watch out for these dogs, these evildoers, these mutilators. So firstly, he said to watch out for the dogs. And he's not saying like, you know, something Ben might say, hey dog, or like Kiko the Chihuahua. Like, it's not a nice word. The dog was generally considered by Jews as the most despised, shameless. It's a miserable creature. So he's saying like those stray dogs kind of see on the streets. We don't really have them here at Australia, but has anyone kind of experienced, show of hands, stray dogs? Great. So you kind of know what I'm talking about. They can be scary sometimes, especially when you're 7 years old. I've got a little story actually. I grew up in Burma, obviously, until I was 15. So, you know, kind of like had that street life, like kid playing on the street. In the neighborhood, you would play until, you know, dusk from evening. So every evening I'll be kind of playing, and on my way back from playing, you know, with the kids around the neighborhood. And especially when I'm alone, they would try and chase and bite me. And you know, if you ever kind of experience that, there's two tips. One, you just pretend that you're gonna pick up a rock, they're kind of scared of that, or go in a group. So the word dog doesn't really have a good connotation, right? The second word, evildoers, you might say, evildoers, bad, sounds pretty self-explanatory, but one thing to note here is that in another translation, it says evil workers. So emphasis on the word worker, doer. They're the people who have a lot of zeal, works really hard towards what they believe is true, except they distort the message of the gospel. What that means is they promote, you know, this kind of Judaistic view of justification by works, meaning you work hard to get to heaven. So do the right thing, keep all the commandments, or else you will get to heaven. You won't get to heaven. Right? And lastly, mutilators. It's a play on word, actually, on the word circumcision. Circumcision, if you don't know, I'm not going into detail, but it's a sign of the covenant that the people of Israel have with God. If you want to know more, Genesis 17 is the place to be. But what Paul is saying now to those people is that rather than being a sign of a covenant, you're making it unnecessary obligation for followers of Christ. So you're just mutilating the body. So those are the three kind of words that he used to call out someone or to warn us about, right? Paul is actually not calling three different groups of people though. but he's calling out one group of people from three different angles. So to understand why Paul is calling these people dogs, evil workers, mutilators, you have to understand that Paul was talking to this group of the Jewish kind of Christians that are religious, right? So they are Jewish Christians who are religious, and they were following behind Paul. And then after Paul has left the place, after preaching the gospel, which is salvation through grace, right, and faith alone, they would come back and tell the Gentiles, right, that salvation is not just about believing in Jesus, but you have to be circumcised first, you have to obey all the laws, you have to believe in Jesus, then, only then, will you be saved. Faith plus work, right, equals salvation. And these guys placed a high importance on religious effort and strictly following the Old Testament laws. And I guess you might, like, I actually ask myself sometimes, and like, why is that wrong, right? Isn't it better to do everything you can to be safe? Does anyone feel, I don't know, maybe not. But, you know, didn't Cain last week or the week before said, work out your salvation, you know? It's like, isn't it a good thing? I can actually kind of relate to that thinking. Another story time. So last month or so, I started looking after Levi by myself because Joyce would go out and play badminton once a week. When she came back, you know, I completely forgot about the dishes that were piling up because I was working on some stuff on the computer. She wasn't very happy because, you know, when I went out, when I'm outside, she would always do all the cleaning. So the following week, right, when she went out for badminton again, I not only did the dishes, I cleaned the benches, you know, wipe everything, you know, so that I thought to myself, you know, I better do everything to be safe. Maybe just like the Jewish religious Christians. Am I good now, right? Like, I've done all these things, you know? Do I need to do more dishes? Clean the house? But the tricky thing with this is that Joyce is not even asking me to do all this stuff. But when I place a high importance on work, right, and getting it right, I thought I had to do everything I can to be right with Joyce. But that's not the gospel. Does anyone know what the word gospel means? Maybe. Good news, yeah. It's not good news if you have to kind of keep second guessing, right? If you're good with God. And if we're in right standing with God, and I'll get to that a bit later. Actually, thank you, Ben, for doing my sermon for me. So in verse 4, Paul is saying that if anyone thinks they have all the right requirements to enter heaven, he has more. You know, and then he goes on to this list of things he's accomplished. And you might even think he's boasting, but you'll actually see that he's doing the exact opposite. He said, you know, I'm circumcised on the eighth day. So he said, come from a really godly family, right, who is wise enough to obey the law, because on the eighth day is what was, I guess, recommended by the law. I'm a citizen of Israel, right? I'm from the tribe of Benjamin, which is a very prominent tribe. I'm a super duper Hebrew, right? Not mixed with any other race. I'm also a Pharisee. We've heard Pharisees in maybe a negative connotation, but Pharisees are actually the most kind of religious sect in the Jewish circles, because they know the Old Testament back to front, and they pride themselves in knowing the laws to the T and following the laws to the T. And he said, do you want to know about action, about zeal, right? I'm so zealous that I persecuted the church. I don't sit around and wait for things to happen. And in regard to righteousness, I was blameless. You know, I live a perfect life that follows and adhere to the law. And when I fail to stick to the law, I sacrifice the right animal. I'm faultless, right? And then right after that list, in verses 7 to 8, you can see that Paul did this thing where he kind of started taking stock of his spiritual bank account, right? Whatever gains to me, I now consider loss. It's actually kind of like an accounting term. If anyone's an accountant here, please correct me if I'm wrong. But Paul is basically saying, everything I thought was an asset now is a liability, right? Everything I thought was bringing me closer to God, now I have to rebalance my balance sheet, because my trust in these things for salvation will actually keep me away from being right with God, from knowing God. Burma was and is currently under the rule of a military dictatorship. So in 1985, a while ago, right? These notes, I don't know if you can see on the screen, were introduced. Can you see, like, the numbers okay? Yeah. Some of them are quite odd, actually. Can you see, like, the weird kind of, like, 15 and 25, 35, 45, 75, 90, right? It's really weird, actually. Well, the reason for these weird numbers is because the dictator at that time decided that the 75 jet, which is the currency, would commemorate his 75th birthday. And then he added all these random numbers so that it looks good. I don't know. So that was 1985, right? Only 2 years later, 1987, without warning, he demonetized the money overnight and without compensation. So, because I think it's too hard to count. And mind you, that's about 70% of, you know, the country's money now deemed worthless overnight. And it's actually affected so many people's lives because back in the days, their savings were actually cash, not banks, right? I actually know a few family friends who were considered rich and then that happened and they just went bankrupt, like, fully. And, you know, because the money is now just paper, like no more than garbage, right? So in Paul, in the verse in 7 to 8, is saying that everything he thought was good now is garbage, right? The Greek word for garbage is actually, I'm going to butcher this, skubalon or something like that. And no, it's not a word that someone would actually use from the pulpit, because it basically means like cow poop, but less eloquent. So Paul is saying that, you know, those things were good for a time, these righteousness thing that I did, but now it has expired. It's worthless now because now he knows Jesus. He knows Christ. And in verse 9, he says, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith. So righteousness, what is it? What does it even mean? Thanks, Ken, for doing. That was good. This is a quote from Graham Tomlin. It says, in essence, righteousness means a right relationship with God, which leads to right relationships with others, right? It is a gift made possible through the life, the death, the resurrection of Jesus. So righteousness is ultimately about being on good terms with God, being right with God. Now, Paul distinguished two types of righteousness in there. He says, one that comes from from the law, and then the second one is that comes from God on the basis of faith. So what is Paul talking about here? Well, he's saying that there is two ways of trying to get right with God. The first way is to try and keep all the law as much as you can, just like me trying to clean everything I can with Joyce, right? And the second way is to believe that Jesus has done for it all, relational. So let's look at the first one. Paul is basically saying that the first way of getting right with God is not good enough. But why not? You know, I'm a good person. I go to church every Sunday. I used to go to 3 churches every Sunday. I tithe, I give, I haven't killed anyone. I'm committed to Joyce. I haven't committed any adultery, you know. Maybe I've done a bit of a like white lies in there, but I'm not a liar normally. But when Jesus came in Matthew, he actually raised the bar. In verses, you know, Matthew 5, 21 and 22, he said, if anyone has an angry thought with your brothers and sister, you've committed murder. If anyone sees someone with a lustful, you know, thought, you've committed adultery. So we can try all we want, but with that kind of standard, we're bound to fail. My man C.S. Lewis said, no man knows how bad he is until he tried very hard to be good. Isn't that true though? Like, when we think about not doing something, that's when we think about it more, do it more, right? Subconsciously. For example, I'll say, don't think about the pink elephant, right? Immediately you kind of go, maybe. If that's harder for you, I'll give you another one. Don't think about Cain. Which one? Right? Like, there's two. Anyways, the point is that the first way of trying to do it yourself, it's not good. And remember, the gospel means good news, right? It's not good news if we have to keep second guessing. And why is it good news? Because there's no second guessing. And how do we do it? Paul said, on the basis of faith, right? Remember that Paul was so aggressively warning us about religious people. And do you remember why? It's because these people are saying that you need to do the right things to get into the kingdom of heaven. So faith is the opposite to doing those things, right? So what is faith? If you were at Revive Camp in last year, I kind of give this a little imagery, but faith is about putting your whole weight onto something, right? Your whole trust into something. And trusting it so much that you don't even have to think about it. Just like those chairs that you're sitting on, the red chairs, right? Or the couch. You don't really think about it when you walk into church today and sat down, right? You have faith that those chairs will lift you up and hold you up. So, but something to note though, Paul is not denouncing the law nor the righteousness demanded by the law. But Paul is denouncing his former self-righteousness and his confidence in his own merits. So if we look at verses 10 and 11, let's look at why Paul is doing what he's doing, right? The why. So Paul said, to know Christ, to know the power of his resurrection and the participation in his suffering. Simply put, Paul is saying, I'm doing this because I want to know Jesus more intimately. The person of Jesus, the power and the pain of Jesus. So to know the person of Jesus, it sounds like it's pretty self-explanatory, right? Paul wants to know Jesus increasingly. To know the power of his resurrection, meaning it's the power of godly living, service and suffering. Do you remember what the religious people are asking people to do? They said faith plus work equals salvation, right? Well, the gospel, what Paul is saying is actually faith comes first, and with that comes salvation and works. So when we receive Jesus with faith, there is actually a change of heart in us. We start wanting to love more, give more, read the Bible to know more about Jesus, you know? And then we work out our salvation. That's what Cain said, right? And the next one is the participation in his suffering. In other words, he wants to know the pain of Jesus. You know, when I was dating Joyce a few years back, it's the early months, right? And Joyce and I were kind of only starting to know each other. And then one day, we took her pet Suki, her family dog, to a vet to get him checked up because he wasn't feeling too well. One thing led to another. Unfortunately, we had to put him down that night. And I was there with Joyce, and everyone else was kind of zooming in. And that was like a really kind of sad and painful moment for Joyce. But that experience really drew us closer, right? You might have a similar experience with someone you love. And when you share that someone's pain, you actually grow closer to them. So Paul is saying that he wants to know all of Jesus, right? The person of Jesus, the power of his resurrection, and then the participation in his suffering. Okay, I'm almost done. Apparently that's a tip. You might be thinking, how does this apply to me? You know, here at St. Hills at 6 p.m. Well, we don't really have religious, traditional Jewish Christians to look out for, but some of us have that voice that says, you haven't prayed enough. You haven't read the Bible. You haven't served at church this week. You haven't been a good Christian. I don't know if you relate to that. And the rest of us may have this tendency to think, We've done enough, right? I've read my Bible today and I'm on a 3-year streak on my Bible app, right? I've prayed 3 times today. I've been serving at church 3 times a week this week. But look at that guy, right? He doesn't even want to go to church. We don't have religious Jewish Christians, but we have ourselves. We unknowingly begin to think that it's our works that's what saves us. And when we don't do the right things, we feel like we failed. And when we do the right things, we get overconfident. So what's the solution? There are 2 steps, Paul is basically saying. 1, forget yourself, right? Just forget about it, right? And 2, enjoy him. It's countercultural, actually, because the world is telling us to become someone, right? Someone important, so that we are accepted and loved. But Jesus is saying, deny yourself and follow him, to carry your own cross and share in his pain, ultimately to know him more, because you are someone in him. You are important. You are accepted. You are loved. Well, why do I want to do that, you know? You might ask. Well, because he's worth it. It sets you free from having to prove yourself. I now do the dishes at home, not because I'm scared I'll disappoint Joyce, but because it's a response to how much I appreciate what she does, you know? She will wake up at night 3 times a night to look after Levi. Like, that's, I just sleep through it. It's not that great. But the gospel frees us from striving for God's love, because we are already pursued by God. And this is the gospel that Paul said, which he said was worth more than his self-righteousness. This is the gospel, right? Belief that Jesus, being God, came onto earth, lived a life we couldn't live. He died the death we should have died, so that the consequences of our sins were put on him at that cross. When that happens, now we're in the right relationship with God. Because of Jesus, that exchange happened, and then we just have to trust that. Put our faith in that, like those chairs. Sit on it, right? And then we are free from condemnation, free from striving. So I want to leave you guys with 3 practical tips how to forget yourself and to look at God. And I kind of forced this. It's A, B, C. Great. First, ask him, right? Like, ask him to help you. I think we have a tendency to try and work things out first before we ask God to help us. And I'm very guilty of that, actually. And this is a reminder to me. But also, I want to leave it with you. If you find yourself that you can't forget yourself, you keep looking at, you know, things that are happening around you and you can't enjoy God, first thing you can do, ask him to help you. Second, be thankful, right? Thankfulness turns our eyes away from us towards somewhere else, towards God, towards others around us. And then the third one is connection before correction. That's something I actually live by in my kind of personal walk. And basically what it means is that before you want to even try and correct what you're doing wrong, find that connection with God first. If you want to, and the same applies to people around you, if you want to correct someone, find the connection first, get to know them first, empathize with them first before you correct them. So yes, to summarize, real righteousness is about relying on what Jesus has done for you and not what you can do, right? And the best way to do that is to forget about yourself and to enjoy God. And like Paul, just keep wanting to know him more intimately. And out of that comes everything else. The desire, the doing, the working out your salvation, right? You are right with God because of what Jesus has done for you. And when you accept his free gift of grace, God now sees you blameless, just how he would see Jesus. And that's real righteousness. If this is the first time you've heard something like this and you want to talk to someone about this, please come and chat to Kane, myself, Adam. Or if you want to receive prayer by the end of this, feel free to do the same.